Welcome to Between a Talk and a Hard Place, a podcast for women bringing down-to-earth conversations about the realities of our real-life experiences. I'm your host, Lisette McKenzie, author, life and mindset transformation coach, and self-concept connoisseur. And together with my girls, Alicia and Natira, we'll be discussing everything from situations to situationships and the challenges women face every day as we navigate this thing called life.
All right, y'all. So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we wanted to dedicate this episode to talking about domestic violence in the hopes of building more awareness. I know I've been in an abusive relationship. I know Natira has been in an abusive relationship. Alicia has dodged a bullet. But for those people who have been in those situations, and people who are in those situations that they just feel they can't talk about it, they don't want to talk about it, they're afraid to talk about it, I think that more people need to jump on board and stop avoiding the topic of domestic violence. So who's going to start this? How are we starting?
Well, I want to say this, especially since it's Awareness Month. It's easy to feel ashamed of your situation. It's easy to feel stuck, you know, in a situation where you feel you've made so many poor choices and so many poor decisions that you feel that there's no light at the end of the tunnel, that your past does not define who you are and who you will be.
Absolutely.
I think that's, you know, even if you find yourself in that situation right now today as you're listening to this podcast, just know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and that you have to decide, you have to make some really tough decisions about what it is that you are going to do about it. And no decision is ever easy, especially when you find yourself in a situation where you have children. You know, a lot of women find themselves in situations where their significant other is a caregiver or a provider financially. And you find yourself stuck in a situation where you don't really know what to do or where to go or how to fix it because you've gotten into this cadence of the cycle of abuse. And you know when it's going to come and you know when what not to say and what to do to try to alleviate the situation. We've been there, you know, and sometimes you can quell a situation and sometimes you can't. It just depends. But just know that because this is Awareness Month, you know, keep a journal, you know, document your situation. It may help you in the end. Right. Be very careful because domestic violence is not just, you know, physical abuse and emotional abuse. It could mean your very life. You know, for me, it's not just telling the woman, well, you just need to leave. Well, you know, it depends because life and death could be on the line. So I think as women, we need to be very conscientious of what we're dealing with and who we're dealing with while we're dealing with the individual. And understand the risk that we put ourselves in when we're in those situations. I know for me at the time, I was angry with my mother, so I didn't want to go home. You know, that was just the thing. I was determined, I'm not going home. But what I was dealing with and putting up with, I didn't have to deal with because my mother wouldn't have treated me like that. You know, it was really silly and immature for me at the time, what I was actually doing. But, you know, where I was then and where I am now is polar opposites of where I was then and where I am today. And so I just want to encourage those who are going through right now today that this isn't your forever. This is just the moment that you're in. And you have to make some really, really, really tough decisions about what you're going to do to get out of this problem. And you got to get really creative about the solution to that problem.
And just to interject, when it comes to domestic violence, it's frustrating to hear people be sold this dream, this nightmare that domestic violence is a common relationship problem. It's not a relationship problem. Domestic violence is an individual problem. Relationships are not or should not be built on a foundation of violence. Domestic violence it's a pattern of behavior. It has nothing to do, there's nothing that should tell you that you should be expected to, or you should have the expectations of being abused in any relationship. And I think a lot of people, even in hearing some responses to typical conversations, people will say, yeah, you know, it happens. It's sad that it's so accepted. It's so widely accepted as a quote unquote relationship problem. It's not a relationship problem. And something else that you said, you know, when it comes to talking about it, you said writing a journal. I think writing a journal to chronicle who you are and, you know, what's going on with you is a wonderful, wonderful idea. But also, excuse me, y'all, but also trying to find a bond with other individuals. And I'm not really talking about friends, because sometimes your friends are not really going to help you, especially if they're going through the same situation. Just bonding, speaking to people, putting yourself in a more positive environment, because sometimes when you don't know, you know, you meet someone and they're peaches and cream, you know, they're the sweetest. And then, what is that? Have y'all seen that doll? It's so cute. And then when you squeeze it, it turns into this mean, ugly looking monsterish kind of doll. Have y'all seen it?
Oh my God. No, I would never buy nothing.
I forget what it is. And it's actually on YouTube, y'all. So if go on YouTube and it's a stuffed animal and the parents be squeezing it and scaring the mess out of their kids, because it's so cute until you squeeze it and it makes this really angry face. So a lot of the times when people are getting into these abusive relationships, they're starting out with that sweet, cuddly, cute stuffed animal.
Oh, that's how it always starts out.
And then you squeeze it the wrong way and it turns into this creature. So
yeah, nobody punched you in the first time. This is a mess.
Exactly. They draw you in with their sweetness, their sweet talking. Whispering those sweet nothings in your ear. I think that we have to be more open to talking to people, not just people in our circle, because if you're surrounded by a bunch of yes men and yes women, they're not really going to try to tell you anything that you don't want to hear. You need to hear the honest to God truth. You need to be open to understanding what you're going through, what's right and what's wrong. And the sad part is that when people are in these abusive relationships for so long, they become used to it. It becomes a natural thing to them. So they don't recognize it as being something that's wrong.
Yeah, because you have to think culturally too. There are some cultures where male dominance is the culture. Mm-hmm. And so women are discouraged. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Make him treat you like this. You know, the blame is placed on the female, saying, you know, if you would be more submissive, then this wouldn't happen.
Right.
Or if you would do this or that. So culturally, you may even be even more stuck because you're in a family that discourages divorce or separation, or, you know, they just see it as you are the problem, not the other way around. And so that's a very difficult situation to be in.
I had a friend when I was going through my situation. I had a friend who he was very religious.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't think that me leaving my situation, he didn't think that the abuse should have been a cause or a reason for me to leave that situation. He didn't think that that was a good reason. I should give, in his words, I should have given it more chance. I should have given more chances.
Mm.
I really don't know how many more chances a person really needs. I mean, there was years of chances, but right. It's just that mindset of, oh, he'll change. Well, he may change, you know. He could be a completely different person now. I don't know. But the fact was, I shouldn't have to stay there and endure everything that I was enduring, waiting for him to change. Maybe I just wasn't his change person, you know what I mean? Maybe the change wasn't meant for me.
So, and then if you find yourself in a relationship where you bring out the worst in a person and they bring out the worst in you,
time to go.
What is that really saying?
Yeah.
Is this something that I should be investing my time and my energy in? If we both don't bring out the best in one another, your partner should encourage you, support you, challenge you in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
To be a better person. Absolutely. Not in a I'm going to dominate you type of way.
Absolutely.
But I'm not surprised that you had friends that felt that way. I mean, you think about religion. Some religions, divorce is frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is to be submissive. If you would be submissive, he mm-hmm. wouldn't act like this. You know, these excuses for bad behavior. And then no one really talks to the man to see why do he think that this is acceptable behavior.
Right.
That's very true.
Very true.
What is it that you learned that says that this is okay?
Very true. The man, I now that I think about it, Natira, I've never, and it could just be the places that I frequent, but based on my environment, the environment that I'm always in, I've never heard that be addressed in that way to a male. I've never heard that.
Yeah, what is it that they experience in their life
mm-hmm.
that tells them that this is okay?
I think a lot of times it's their upbringing, because if you saw that happen between your parents, your father was hitting your mother, then a lot of times you think that's acceptable. And that's not just with domestic violence, that's also with sexual assault as well. Mm-hmm. If someone sees a certain type of behavior modeled in youth, a lot of times there's a good chance that it will replicate or be seen as acceptable once that person becomes of age.
Right. Yep.
Well, one of the things that I have experienced, and I'm not sure how often this is, but I suspect that it's fairly often. The generation of males in our age group grew up either with their fathers or without them. And if they did grow up with their fathers, there was this cadence of being beat all the time.
Uh-huh.
And that anger that they felt towards their own fathers, I wanted to kill them, they then take it out in their relationships because that's a place where they do have the power.
So in my situation, it was the opposite. It was mommy issues. I can't speak on what happened in his childhood growing up, but I know a lot of the things just in arguments and conversations mm-hmm. that I had with him, a lot of his problems were with his mom. It was a very huge disconnect in their relationship. Mm. So I think it can go both ways. I think bad behavior breeds bad behavior. I believe that it's not necessarily a mother or father thing. It can be a mother and father thing.
Yeah.
Or just unresolved issues in general.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is how I'm going to exercise my anger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My ability to take it out on something. And then what do they do? You know, how do normal people deal with anger? Some people deal very well and others don't deal well at all when they're angry. So I just feel like, you know, as you're a kid, everyone keeps their hands to themselves should be the cadence.
Right.
And you tell people how to treat you. So you have to set those boundaries from day one. And don't get me wrong, it's not from day one that this starts, right? Like you said, it's a cute, cuddly little teddy bear. But then when it happens, the moment that it happens, what do you do in that moment? Because of course they come back with the, I'm sorry, I didn't mean, and I was drinking, and I went too far, I'm sorry. And, you know, here comes the flowers and the cards and the I love yous and the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde syndrome. And then as a female, you're like, well, you know, okay, he apologized. He was, you know, having a bad moment and it'll never happen again. And then, you know, a year later, you realize that you're in a situation that you didn't even really plan for. And I think that is where the surprise comes in, and you're like, okay, what do I do now? Or now you have a kid and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, what do I do now? Yeah. You know, I think for anybody, the one thing, your past does not have to dictate your future. What was once does not have to be the case today. And so even though you may find yourself in those situations, thinking in the back of your mind, this could happen again, and it does, that you can seek help and that you can get out if that's what you want to do. Yep. And you have to make that decision up in your mind and be firm with it. Because there's going to be a lot of people, if they hear what he hit you, they want to remove you immediately from that situation. And I do too. I would want to remove you too.
Mm-hmm.
But are you ready to leave? Are you ready to cut the cord? Are you ready to walk away? You have to ask yourself some really, really tough questions and be okay with those answers.
And I think
no one else can make that for you.
I think this is why I think that these discussions should happen more often, because, and especially younger girls, young women, they go into these relationships thinking that this is the norm. This type of behavior is normal. This is how people show they care. They go into these relationships with these false pretenses, and there's no conversations happening to let them know that it's not okay and that it does not have to be that way. So, and even when I see, even on social media, even in real life, when the subject of domestic violence comes up, people do an about face. It's like they scatter like roaches. Nobody wants to touch that subject. And until that changes, this problem is going to continue to exist.
Well, yeah, you have to teach your daughters and you have to teach your son.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
This is the conversation that has to happen in households.
But it's not.
That's the deal breaker. That is I want my daughter to know, you know, I don't care who she's with, she can always come home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The door is never shut for you. If you feel unsafe, if you are not happy, this person is treating you ill, you have every obligation and right to walk away and say, I'm not tolerating it.
Right.
And my daughter's a little hardcore with it. I'm like, forgive the boy, dang. But I'm kind of glad that she has that umption. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't tolerate ill treatment. Period.
Right. Yeah.
I think she gets that a little bit from me because, you know, I asked her, I said, you ever heard me and John argue? And she's like, no. And it's not that me and my husband don't argue. It's that we have a respect level to our arguing.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see that it's getting elevated and it's not going anywhere, and now we're just saying things to hurt one another, because that's what you do when you get in an argument.
Right.
And my husband is really good at it. So we just agree to not talk right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now is not the opportune time to talk about this because I'm upset and you're upset. And we're not going to use the right words to really get out what it is that we're trying to get out.
Right.
But that comes with maturity and experience.
Right.
When you're young, you don't know that. You just mm-hmm. say what comes to your mind. You got on my nerves. And here's why. I saw you looking at that girl. You know, we just are catered that way. But there has to be a line. You know, you have to tell your sons and you have to tell your daughters that this is the line. And if you cross that line, it's over. And there's other fish in the sea.
I agree.
This person is not, you know, you can find another one.
Okay, so I just wanted to comment. I saw this really interesting documentary yesterday about child marriages, and it focused on various women who essentially were forced to marry at a young age because either they were sexually assaulted and got pregnant, or they had sex at a really young age and got pregnant. And what ended up happening for a lot of them is once they got married to who's usually a much older man, their families essentially didn't provide any support. And I thought it was very interesting because one of the narratives that the documentary was kind of aiming to dismantle was that it was better for these young girls essentially to be married to a toxic, abusive spouse instead of trying to raise the child alone. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like the families just were not interested in providing support. They're like, well, just get married and deal with it instead right. of saying, no, you don't have to tolerate this. So I think that's something else that kind of needs to be addressed, this notion of women not being capable of making tough decisions and living on their own, even if they do have to deal with something like a teenage pregnancy. Mm. It's glossed over, or it's assumed that it's better for a young girl who obviously has no clue what she's getting into to marry instead of trying to figure it out. And when I say child brides, I do mean child brides. Like the youngest lady who got married, she's 11 years old.
Oh my
gosh. She was raped by a much older man and forced to marry him. And I think this was Florida. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And where?
Wait, was it a black lady?
Yes.
I think I think I heard about her story.
Yes.
Oh,
and what
man.
State was this where this happened?
Florida.
Florida. No. Let me see if
let
I
me
can...
look. I'm trying to pull
you
that
can
up.
Get married at 11 years old, can you?
Okay. That's the thing. The documentary also focused on the laws surrounding child marriage, because a lot of states you can get married super young, like under 17.
Mm-mm.
I know. Excuse me.
That's crazy to me.
Sure, her name is Sherry Johnson.
Yes, that's her.
Mm-hmm. Sherry okay, Johnson was forced to marry her rapist when she was 11.
Yes.
What?
Mm-hmm.
The documentary is I Was a Child Bride, The Untold Story. It was on A&E originally, excuse me, but I think you can find it in other places. I just happened to be flipping channels yesterday and caught it, and I was just amazed.
But that goes back to women not being able to possess their whole selves. I mean, exactly. Women were only given the right to vote in 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And before that, right. They weren't allowed to own property. You know, I didn't realize Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the reason why I can get a credit card is because she won the case. Because that was for the males. You couldn't get an apartment in your name. You couldn't do certain things on your own. Wow. Yeah.
And I think that, and to control, to be even more controlling, that's where the abuse came in. Because God forbid you had a thought, you know, you wanted to share a thought, you wanted to speak up for yourself. Men, you know, men weren't going to tolerate that because that was just disrespectful. That was unheard of. So, I think a lot of it is just generational. It's generational curses that need to be broken. And people are afraid to take, some people are afraid to take that first step. And then there's others who are the victims of generational curses who don't know how to take that step. They don't know how to start these conversations. They might know what doesn't feel good. They might know that, you know, they don't like being in a relationship where they're constantly being hurt, where they're constantly crying, or they're constantly in fear, but they don't know how to approach that. And they don't want to be judged. They don't want to be scrutinized. So they keep it to themselves. And I think this is why people need to be more open to, and not victim shaming, because that happens a lot.
People, why don't you just leave?
Yeah, what did you do?
What's wrong
to make
with you?
What did you do to make him do that, or her? Because of course, men are also victims of domestic abuse. I can't forget about that. But the victim shaming is probably one of the hardest things to deal with when you're a domestic violence victim. So. You know, we just need to start being more open to listening with the intent of understanding the person's situation and not with the intent of pointing a finger and making them feel bad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And always really being there for support. I think that's what's essentially the best thing that a person can do is be the support for someone else, to listen, to be a crying post, to be the one that they could come to when they're in a crisis, until they are able to make a better way out.
And there's a lot of layers to this onion, because just because you're being supportive to someone doesn't mean that right away that problem is going to go away. There's a lot of layers that have to be peeled away and broken down to get to the real root cause of what's going on. And it's easy to tell a woman, and you know, for the woman who gets up and leaves an abusive situation, I applaud her. But then there's still the problem of the man who was abusive, or the partner who was abusive, because this particular woman, she was able to get up and go away, but now she just vacated a spot for another woman to come in. So there's so many layers that have to be peeled away in order to just eradicate the problem, and not enough people are willing to address it.
No, because then that takes some real soul searching as to why you feel that this behavior is okay. You know, for instance, in my household, my mother was a yeller. She yelled all the time. And so I don't yell at my house. And nobody can yell at me either. Like, that's just a rule. So it's just a rule. There's no yelling in here. So, you know, when you tell a person, you can't yell at me, and they come from an environment where that's all they know, that could be a very hard adjustment, because that's all I know what to do.
Right.
You know, that's all I know is to yell my point. And I'm like, no, that ain't going to work over here with me. That doesn't work at all.
Right.
It no one wants to take that hard look in the mirror and say, why do they have these tendencies that they do? And what are they going to do about it? You know, what are they going to, when I was with my abuser, I would always leave and he would always come and get me. And one day I asked him, I said, why is it that every time I leave you, you always come back to get me? And he said to me, he said, you make the demons go away. And so he had some internal battles that he was just dealing with. And I was the one that made them better. And so he didn't want to let me go because you're my safe haven. You, when I'm with you, I feel better. But when you leave, I feel like, you know, 2 cents.
Right.
And I think we need to address the underlying, like you said, the layers, the underlying issues that people, they're feeling, how to deal with them, how to get over them, and how to make it better.
Right.
It's, I think, the battle of the journey of life, because things happen to us that are beyond our control. And we feel some type of way about them.
Mm-hmm.
How then do we address that, get over them, and move forward is the question.
To your point, Natira, I think one thing that I've noticed, just generally speaking, because of 2020, is that a lot of people seem to want some kind of relationship just so that so they don't have to be alone with themselves, because if they're alone with themselves, they have to deal with those voices in their head. And I'm not talking about voices like mental illness. I'm talking about the way you talk to yourself, the way you encourage or discourage yourself in everyday life. And I some people would rather be in a toxic relationship than be alone and face their internal issues. And I think a big problem in our culture is that relationships are romanticized in the wrong way, and people don't necessarily realize that just because someone's in a relationship does not mean it's healthy, does not mean it's safe. Some people are literally in a relationship so they don't have to consider the idea of being alone, and that's not healthy. And I think what also needs to be said more is that it's okay to be alone and happy with yourself instead of being with the wrong person and miserable. Because I've seen so many situations of people who are in relationships or trying to start a relationship with the absolute wrong person just because they can't handle being alone and facing their issues. We all have issues, yes, but personally, I'd rather be alone with my issues and know that I'm not going to hit myself or mistreat myself in such a way than be in a relationship with someone who does not know my value, and even worse, does not know their own value.
And just to your point, Alicia, I was one of those people. I did not like my own company. And that's why now I'm so heavy into self-discovery, because facing myself and what I thought I knew about myself was the hardest thing ever, because I was always comparing what I saw to what I saw in everyone else. So I was constantly setting myself up to fail because I was trying to get validation from other people, because my word wasn't enough. So I
think that validation that you were seeking from others, where did that essentially come from?
I really don't know where it began. It could have been, because I can remember being in school, you know, a little girl being bullied, body shaming, and, you know, because I was dark skin. And I think I carried a lot of that subconsciously. I carried a lot of that on through life itself, because I was always second guessing myself, second guessing what I wore? Is it flattering? Are people going to look at me and think something wrong of me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it was just wanting to be accepted, even if that meant dealing with things that I didn't want to deal with. I didn't want to be the odd woman out.
Oh, I see.
And then once you get into an abusive relationship, once you take those insecurities into an abusive relationship, it's a wrap. Because everything you do is going to be wrong. And the more wrong it is, the more you're going to want to try to correct it. But you're not trying to correct it for you. You're trying to correct it for them.
For them.
So the web gets spun and the problems get deeper and you get stuck in this place where you don't want to be, but it's also comfort because that's what you know. That's what you've grown to know and love. And all of this is to avoid looking at yourself and accepting who you are right then, right there. But let me tell you, there was a time where I was just like at rock bottom. Like, I didn't want to be around him. I didn't want to be around myself, but there was nothing. I didn't want to be around people. And I stayed with myself for a while. It took me a few weeks. And by the end of that time, I was like, oh, I'm a cool ass bitch. Hold on. And it was hard for me to accept the company of anybody else.
Right.
Because then I had set these expectations. I had all these conversations in my head, which are conversations that I wish I would have had before, or I wish I would have known that I should have had before. That was not downgrading myself, but it was lifting me up. And when I really found out how cool I was, you know, I wasn't this terrible person that couldn't do anything. I literally had to look back at
all the things I had done. Why did you think you were a terrible person? That just, where did these insecurities? Because to me, I mean, of course, again, outside looking in, right? When you look in, the picture's pretty, right? It's beautiful. Here's this beautiful girl, beautiful to me. I don't know about nobody else, but to me, that was beautiful. Like, this, I want to know this girl. This girl is cute. She got it going on. She got the fly skier. She looked nice. You look well taken care of. Like, your parents, to me, just the outside looking in person, that everything, you had it going on. Like, you just was together. I would have never even assumed in my mind ever that there was an issue of an insecurity. Like, I just wouldn't. I'd be like, who? Who are you talking about?
That was just me fake. You know, you fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
You fake it to fit in. And because even when we were in elementary school, I used to, and remember now, I came from Queens, from attending Catholic school to going to the Bronx to a public school. That was a culture shock. So I went from being with predominantly white peers who made fun of my, you know, my hair. They would think my hair was a wig. I had one teacher who, she actually pulled my hair because she thought it was a wig. And she was a nun. My mother got called in because she pulled, I think I was in third or fourth grade. And she pulled my hair and I punched her in the stomach.
Oh, yeah. Don't pull my hair.
I punched her. So my mom got called in. So I went from being called dirty and, you know, other kids telling my classmates not to play with me, to going to a school with people that look like me, but yeah, I can't fit in because I didn't grow up in that environment. So now I'm speaking too proper. You know, I'm sitting straight. I'm not talking back. So it was hard. It was a struggle. It was a real power struggle.
I would have never guessed that Alicia in a million years. She just fit right into me.
Girl.
That girl over there.
Put on a front. I used to hate going to elementary school. Oh my God, I hated it. I hated it. And the only thing, there were four people that made me feel good about elementary school. That was Unitira, Sharika, Shaniqua, and Aisha. That's what I went to school for. That's what I looked forward to going to school for. Because everything else was just foreign to me. And I felt like I had to try to mold myself into something else so that I could fit in and not be made fun of all over again.
Wow.
So, you know, when you carry those insecurities and you find someone who also has their own insecurities.
Sure. It's a powder keg.
Person who can make, you know, who they can make feel bad to help boost their self-esteem up. It's a wrap.
You right about that. It is. That is a wrap. That's a powder keg waiting to explode.
Yeah.
But I guess then we need to, you know, maybe another time on another topic is really to talk about the insecurities that we develop.
Absolutely.
As females, and then what do we do about that?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a deeper issue than someone dominating their force against you, right? You know, but why is it that we carry these burdens of insecurities around, and what is it that we can do to change that? I think it's a deeper topic that we should explore.
Oh yeah.
So I just hope that everyone, whoever is listening to this episode, if they are in an abusive situation, and I know getting out is not hard. Everyone's situation is different. Some situations are way more extreme than others. But I'm hoping that if someone is listening to this and they are in that situation, that they try to find a way out. There are so many resources that you can reach out to, but you just have to be willing to go forward. Don't let that fear just grab you back.
Don't let the fear grab you back. Don't let the time that you invested in this relationship hold you back, because now you're just wasting time in a relationship that you could be in something way better.
And that's time that you won't get back. But that doesn't mean that your life is over. Your life doesn't have to be over.
So much more. But I held on to the idea. Well, we've been together for so long. Well, tough. Enough. I've had enough.
Yep,
let it go.
Absolutely. Keep the conversation going. Join the Facebook group at Between a Talk and a Hard Place. And share your thoughts about this week's episode. Thank you.